audio and
oh wow, well, he's not sending a good room for that then. For a
how about now? Is this better?
Oh yeah, that's good.
I guess it's clean. It's crisp. It's nice.
There we go.
Yeah,
there
I mean, today we're with Wei here. Wei, maybe do a quick like 2 second, well, not 2 second, 30 second intro on who you are, and then we'll get into the market chatter.
Awesome. Hey guys, thanks for having me here. My name is Wei Zhou. Got a couple of titles right now. I'm currently the CEO for Coin.
Yeah, just throw that to the side. It's the phone.
Yeah, I'm muting it. So I'm currently the CEO for CoinsPH, which is the largest regulated crypto exchange and wallet in the Philippines. I'm also advisor and founding partner at Old Fashioned Research, which is a $100 million Web3 fund. Our first raise, I think it's about 50, our first closing is about $50. And then I've been investing generally in, you know, all things Web3, focusing on NFT and Bitcoin the last, I think, 2 years. Prior to all of that, I was actually the CFO at Binance for over 3 years. Joined them, I think, just before their 1 year anniversary in 2018. And then basically worked side by side with CZ and built up a lot of the basically built up all of the investment business at Binance. So a lot of the big deals, small deals, ran Launchpad and Labs for about a year and a half as well. And then also did a lot of work basically landing Binance in a bunch of jurisdictions. So so basically was at the heart of the crypto world for about 3+ years.
That's awesome.
And then I left there about 2 years ago. And then basically been doing the OFR and then coins.
Awesome,
I like
man.
How
thanks.
I like how it was a $100 million fund. Like, that's a bull market.
It was 50, it's now it's 100.
It's coming. Yeah, it was.
Mark the market today, please.
Yeah, that's
no, yeah, we're gonna hear more about this Binance stuff in a bit. Maybe definitely want to hear if you have any stories there and your experience. But let's talk about the market today. I don't know. I mean, like, I was in Sol shit coins. I finally got involved there, topped them.
You really topped them. I stopped
trading today. And I'm not going to take any shorts no matter what, no matter even the market tanks from here. But I'm kind of just a sit out or long guy, sit out or buy dips guy now. We'll see. I mean, like, is it too late to pivot to that? Hopefully not. Mentally, it feels a lot easier because, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm up in this ETH trade. I feel good for once in my life. For the first time in a long time. But yeah, what are you guys seeing in the markets today? Yeah,
what's the reason for your change of heart? It's almost like you've reformed yourself in the last few days.
Up, it would be the answer to that one. I bring
up Dex Screener and I see every single Sol shitcoin about down about 60% today, having been down about 50% yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly.
Did I see you buy AI at 20 million and now it's at five?
I fucking like bought the top of that and talked about it. And then the overnight Binance, speaking of fucking Binance Launchpad, they just launched another AI coin overnight. And I woke up like now like 60%. I was like, okay, it's Wei didn't have any part of that one at least, but. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Sol shitcoins, clearly there's a little rotation going on. Clearly they're vaporous. Clearly it's high-risk shit, small market caps. But why did I change? I mean, like, it's been a long time coming, but obviously, you know, shorting stuff without a catalyst and shorting stuff hoping for breakdowns, it's just like, it's such a fucking picking up any kind of a steamroller type trade, especially at this point. I mean, like, the market is directionally going up. I don't know. What do you guys think about the whole thing?
I think we're going higher. I think we're going higher, but I do think that it could be a bit of a sell the news event with this ETF, but not like a long-term sell the news thing. Just feels as though, I don't know, I can just imagine in the 24 hours to a week after that ETF thing happens, people just being like, oh, it doesn't feel as amazing as we all thought it would feel, and things have slowed down. But I do think things are going higher. Like, it is just a game of momentum at the same time, and people have made money. And just even a small amount of money just means you can keep rolling the dice for quite a while. And given this has been going for like the last, you know, 6 months, it feels as though there's enough equity in the system that people will buy the dip, right? They'll just keep on saying, oh, you know, I'll buy the dip. So it feels like right now the ETH might be the one, right? It feels like everyone's suddenly ETH moved up and everything else moved down, and some of the ETH shitcoins moved, and That would be interesting to see, because I think that would wreck a lot of people who just like gave up on ETH over the last month.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, people like to pretend crypto's in a vacuum, but traditional markets have literally gone up every day for like a fucking year. And then every chart there looks amazing too. And the wealth effect is real. People have a lot of money out there who stayed invested or had enough funds to invest. So crypto really is a kind of a catch-up trade as well. Like you can't just like recklessly short it at any point without a catalyst or without like an extreme parabolic move to the upside to try to counter, which is obviously also dangerous. But what about Wei OSF? You got any inputs here? Wei, do you trade daily a lot or are you mostly just a buy and hold guy?
I don't trade. I'm a good investor, like, you know, knock on wood so far, but I'm a terrible trader. I'm one of those guys that like I'll see a theme and I go long something and I just forget to sell. So I'm just generally like holding a lot of position, and that works equity. It works, I think, for larger names, but for smaller names, especially in this space, I think it's hard to be a long-term holder for I think smaller names. So but I mean, you do have occasionally like sort of like, you know, those like 1,000 baggers, right? Just off of Binance Launchpad stuff that we did back in like 2020 and 21. With like, you know, Axie and Sandbox and those guys. And then I think those opportunities only exist, I think, in the crypto market. It doesn't really exist anywhere else in the world right now. Yeah. And I think one thing that's kind of cool, I think I probably get a little bit different perspective from you guys, given that I sit out here in Asia, is that like this thing is global. Like it's not this thing is massive. Like, and then I think like the potential, like we're actually set up like really well, I think, for 2024. Like just the amount of stuff that's gonna happen is like, I think this whole sort of like December, you know, mania, I think just like a tease. It's that's like they let you, I feel like this whole like last quarter, last like 6 months, like they'll just show you what's behind the curtain and then just shut the curtain on you a little bit. You know, I think we've had those kind of events. So it felt like this year felt like very like 2019-ish overall, kind of sideways. And a little bit of like a first half of 2020-ish, sort of like, you know, kind of like the sentiment, but yeah.
So why do you say that about Asia? Like, what do you think has really changed over the last, like, I don't know, few months that make you feel as though everything's just going to go nuts?
Because there's, I mean, if you look at sort of some of the comps, like if you look at U.S. stock market, but if you look at like a Hong Kong stock market, that thing is dead. Right, like, you know, like last couple of weeks, like Binance trades more than the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. That was the second or third biggest stock market in the world, right? Other than sort of New York, right? Like it's. So I'm just saying, like, from alternative perspective, if you're like, you know, if you're a trader or an investor, and the same is true, I think, for the local exchange, I think domestically in China as well. So I think there's just sort of like from a just sort of interest perspective, I think it's just shifting.
Yeah, I feel like I've been seeing a lot more interest from Asia and Asian hours lately as well. Like, it's actually been like popping up in chats and shit. You've seen that as well? You've seen flows coming in a lot more lately?
I mean, I think like one of the biggest sort of like, you know, potential black swan that people sort of cared about here was sort of what was going to happen with CZ and Binance. And the net outcome has actually been quite good, right? Because that marketplace can stay open. Right, that means the liquidity gets to stay in the market. The liquidity doesn't leave, and I think that's actually really, really good. And then, for a lot of the users out here, I mean, that's still the go-to platform.
Yeah, and it seems like I saw today that Hong Kong is going to probably approve a bunch of spot ETFs as well. And I think I saw last week, even China was saying they're going to soften their language on things like NFTs and metaverse and all this sort of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, Hong Kong just dropped a major, the HKMA, which is the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, just dropped their stablecoin bill today, which is basically like what they do is they'll it's a little bit different in the US where like Congress passes. Like here, I think the regulators, they'll put stuff out there like in Singapore and Hong Kong, and then they'll let the market to comment on it. And then they'll give you say 2 or 3 months to comment on it, and then they'll come back and then sort of modify a little bit according to whatever the heck the comment they get back. But that's, I think that could be massive. Like if Hong Kong has like a comprehensive sort of stablecoin sort of like regulation that comes out, I mean the amount of wealth, I think the amount of liquidity that you're going to unlock with that comes into the crypto ecosystem could be pretty big.
Yeah, it seems it used to be like people were afraid of China for like regulatory reasons and whatnot. They kind of went down a hard nose path in the past, but now it's kind of like, they're peeling back the onion a little bit step by step. And it's kind of like the bullish reverse of that. Now they're like softening regulation.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, I mean, there's still tremendous, like, you know, large number of people, right, and the massive amount of capital, right? So, and China is, like, you know, very similar in the U.S. in that not only do they invest, I mean, if you look at sort of the, some of the major markets out here, they're purely speculative investors, but China also makes stuff too, right? Like, they also, projects also come out of that region, significantly large number of projects, right? And I think with Hong Kong sort of being more open, what you're going to see is that a lot of, I think you're going to see less and not, what are you going to say? Because before, if you see like I see like an anonymous project with a founding team or all avatars or NFTs, like, you know,
yeah,
like 7 or 8 times, like, it's probably like a China team project, the teams out of China, but they just kind of want to stay anonymous for, you know, for safety. But I think with Hong Kong opening up and actually allowing people to land there to launch projects, you're going to see, you know, more real name based kind of team members, right? And that actually just leads to higher level of trust, better quality projects, and that's just actually good for the ecosystem.
So what are you looking at right now? Like, what is your perfect project to land on your desk to invest in? Like, what are you getting most bullish on in terms of trends and maybe even individual like projects that you feel are going to be birthing like the next big change over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so I'm talking up my book a little bit. So I'll just full disclosure, yeah, but
clearly,
who doesn't?
So sort of like, you know, like we were more prolific, I think, like, you know, when we launched the fund in the early, like late 21, early 22. But since sort of like 22 to today, we've been very cautious, probably making about only 2 to 3 sort of, you know, investments per quarter. And then two of the sort of, you know, we're very big on sort of like NFTs. Like, these are sort of like traditional ETH NFTs, blue chips. And then we make early investors in Pudgy Penguin and Oni Force. I think both of those are sort of like IP driven, storytelling based, sort of one's more mass in terms of the toy and sort of like the Pokemon franchise or Disney franchise with Pudgy. And then Oni, I think, is more of like a storytelling, kind of like a Star Wars universe, kind of with anime. Sort of like, I think both of those are what we're very excited about in terms of the there. And then other sort of projects that haven't been announced yet, but we've been very aggressively hunting for deals in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And I think like right now, you know, we've invested in sort of like Bitcoin ordinal wallets, ordinal infrastructure, but more so, I think there's going to be more, I would say, kind of like layer two being built on top of Bitcoin. And I think with deep, like now you're basically seeing an inscription, right? That's like something that was like sort of the trend the last couple of weeks even, but like that started off of basically inscribing on Bitcoin, right? I think that's like the way I view it is sort of like, I think that infrastructure is still being built, but there are sort of like real, I would say, changes that are happening, like use cases that are happening. Like, we invested in a Bitcoin wallet called Xverse. I mean, that sort of like makes using Bitcoin, like, it's kind of really funny. It's like all of the stuff that we did on ETH sort of like for the last 4 years, it's basically getting done on Bitcoin right now, right? Sort of, if you remember sort of like NFT summer 2021, I think that's going to happen potentially even more so on Bitcoin next year, right? And then sort of like the one analogy that I kind of like to use is like, if Bitcoin is digital like gold, right, the NFT on Bitcoin, inscription on Bitcoin is like going to be like digital jewelry, right? You want accessory, like gold sells for like, you know, $1,000 an ounce, right? But if you sort of like, you know, have like a jewelry that's made out of that, that's much more premium. Sort of, I think that thesis is going to play out. So we've been hunting for, I would say, like high quality NFT projects on Bitcoin. I think that could be a big thing.
Yeah, we had someone on the show last week who was kind of a ordinals maxi, and then week before that we had someone on Sol. So I think we like tried to catch those two trends the last couple of weeks. But you say NFTs on Bitcoin, but then you also mentioned more like utility-based functionality. Like, do you think that's going to have success in terms of like building out the utility side of things, or do you still see that as, you know, Bitcoin by nature is going to be a more difficult chain to build upon? So I just wonder, do you see properly valuable?
It's an ecosystem, right? Like, sort of like you see what happened sort of like with like DeFi on Ethereum, right? And then it was cumbersome, but then it gotten easier, right? And the same thing for NFTs, right? With better protocols that's coming out on NFTs. And then sort of those things sort of combined with like NFT and DeFi, right? I think just like the reason why I think Bitcoin makes a lot of sense is that it's just a large ecosystem, right? It's going to be like maybe if it becomes like a standalone $2 trillion asset class in itself, I mean, it shouldn't just be sort of dead money or dead sort of, you know, it shouldn't just be sitting there, right? Mm. And I think you're seeing that today, that sort of like, you know, it goes back to sort of like my theme on Asia is like one of the bigger groups that has been kind of supporting this have been the miners, right? Which is they're sort of like, you know, and for them, they're like, wait, like, you know, if halving happens or mining gets more complicated and return goes down, that they actually make money on the fees that generated, right, from the inscriptions. And I think that's one group that's actually been a huge part of the Bitcoin ecosystem. And then they're the one that I think has been like sort of, you know, kind of supporting this. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna pretend to be an expert on ordinal stuff, but hey, pushbacks here. Yeah. I was here last week and I forgot Christmas and all that happy nonsense. But I guess the one pushback is that, you know, confirming transactions is super slow on Bitcoin still, and it's pretty expensive to make inscriptions. So it's like, do you think it's going to be scalable and possible for projects to really, you know, create stuff with those two hindrances?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have different standards that's going to evolve, right? Same thing in the early days. If you look at like sort of like, I think we're like at the CryptoKitty days of Bitcoin NFT, right? Like it's expensive, right? But then gradually, I think, you know, maybe the value of the asset kind of justifies it, right? Because for me right now, I think like what's really interesting is that you basically have innovation happening on Bitcoin for the first time in a really long time, right? And then it sort of expands the culture of Bitcoin from just sort of these original Bitcoin maxis to actually just sort of real developers that's actually building on sort of like on the network. So one thing that we noticed is that like for coins, the exchange that I'm the CEO of, we basically recently integrated Bitcoin Lightning, working with David Marks' startup called, I think, LightSpark. And the use of that has been very, very, like, just people, you know, if you can get cheaper transactions on Bitcoin via the Lightning network, most people will do that. Sort of, they sort of, you know, the usage of Lightning in our network has been sort of, went from like zero to like almost 70-80%, like within the month of integration. Right. So I think if there are innovation happening on Bitcoin, whether it's sort of, you know, faster transactions via the Lightning network or giving Bitcoin relevance, you know, with NFTs, with Ordinal, and then maybe even like whether it's BRC20, I think there's a new network called ARC20 that's more like, you know, sort of like ERC20. Like that's, I think that gives Bitcoin, I think has more functionalities than what Ordinal has now. Right. I think all of those things are going to happen. This time around. So,
yeah, that's the one thing I kind of picked up from last week is that you're early to it, but you may be just too early because sometimes the token standards here seem like they could change. They're a little bit fluid. Like BRC20, for example, seems like an inefficient token standard for a fungible token. So there may be like three or four new ones coming out. So if you invest a ton in BRC20s thinking that they're going to be historically relevant, then you could get wrecked, but at the same time, they could stay relevant and you could crush it. And I think that's even the same with order. Like people are questioning about whether the ordering will be able to stay over the medium term and all this sort of stuff. So I don't know. Part of me gets very bullish, like you said, but part of me is like, I don't know if you're just too early to get involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think from an investor perspective, it's a little bit easier because we're just going to investing in sort of like infrastructure builders, like whether they're like wallets or, but in the interim, you know, some of these memes on Bitcoin has been going pretty crazy too. Yeah, because the market is still small.
Yeah. So what else are you looking at? So you said obviously NFT projects, mm-hmm. Bitcoin, gaming was obviously the huge thing coming out of Asia last cycle, and then everyone got wrecked. Are you getting back into that sort of stuff?
Yeah, for gaming, there's one sort of like kind of, I would say like part of the so the most popular so given that we run the biggest exchange in the Philippines, one of our close partners is actually Sky Mavis, which is the builder behind Axie Infinity, and then recently I think they've been focusing sort of they've been building you know, their own gaming games, but they've also sort of built their own kind of like a layer two, kind of like called Ronin. The user like that, I think, is still today the most active gaming chain, with almost, I think, like 1 million monthly active users. And then some of those users are playing Axie, but they have a new game called Pixel, that I think Pixelmon, I forget, but it's, I think it's Pixel, that actually been driving a little bit more adoption. These are very simple, easy to play kind of like games, but I think for them, they're actually have opened up their chain to sort of third party developers, and then they've been, you know, working on that framework for the Ronin chain for the last couple about a year or so. Generally pretty bullish on that, just given that they already have existing distribution in Southeast Asia, you know, in the Philippines during the peak Axie days, they had like 2 or 3 million, you know, daily players.
That was wild. Yeah, everyone was quitting their job to play Axie.
You know what I mean? They were making, I mean, it wasn't sustainable, right? Because you'd be like, wait a minute, right? But it's sort of like I said, that was like maybe like, I think like, you know, last time, maybe there's like one game like that. Maybe this cycle, you get like 5 to 10 games like that. So, And I think Ronin, given that they already have an existing infrastructure, existing players on their system, and they've sort of, you know, have experience in sort of managing that, because they're the only one that kind of have had, you know, millions of players that play a game on their own chain, right? Nobody really has that sort of experience, right? So I think naturally, you know, people are gonna, and they also have their own Ronin wallet. So I think the coin, I think RON is the coin, and then Ronin is the chain.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Like you said, there's gonna be 5 new ones probably for the one Axie that there was last cycle. And then I guess I wondered another thought that probably a lot of us have, and since we're sitting and watching the Western markets, following Twitter in English or whatnot, it's like, in Asia, are they picking the same projects that we're picking, or are they coming up with their own projects, flocking to them? Like, if we want to do research and invest in things that, you know, Asia, Southeast Asia, China are investing in, is there synergies there, or is it all new projects? Is it new NFT projects? Is it fully Chinese-based or fully based out of the Philippines? Or is there a lot of overlaps and synergies? Are they also investing in, like, you know, Bored Apes and Penguins?
They invest in everything that we invest, that what the West invests in. I think there are, I think there is more, I would say more, how do I say this? It's like if you look at what happened to, I kind of want to sort of take, if you look at sort of what happened to Axie, right? Like the origin story of Axie is kind of quite interesting. And I'll use that as kind of an example. Axie was founded, the developers, the game was originally the company was a Vietnamese gaming developer. So it was, Ho Chi Minh, it's either Ho Chi Minh or Saigon, I think one of the cities. I think they're based there. And there's, you know, it's like pretty decent, small building team. And then when I was at Binance, we did Launchpad, I think in 2020, I want to call it. And then at that point, they've been building the game, I think, for about 2 years. They launched it on Ethereum first. And then when they did a Launchpad, they ended up about 1,000, you know, players, right? This was like summer of 2020. The investors on their sort of investor profile was all Asia-based VCs. There were no Western sort of investors in that. They're like, what the heck is this thing? We don't understand it. Doesn't make any sense to us. Who's gonna play this silly little game? It's like a Pokemon. It's like a 3v3 Pokemon, right? Kind of like a battle game. It's like a Pokemon battle game, 3v3, right? And then it's like on-chain gaming. Who cares? But one of the bigger early investors in them was Animoca. Other investor was in was a Korean VC called Hashed, right? And then what happened is that they're like, okay, Ethereum's too expensive. We'll just like do an EVM ripoff chain called Ronin. Like we don't really know what it does, but we'll just copy one and we'll put it on our own chain. And all of a sudden the transaction cost just went to like almost nothing. Right. And that makes the game all of a sudden become much more playable. And then because they had their Axie token listed on Binance, it basically gives sort of people value then. Right. And then it's basically an NFT bit collect. It's like an NFT, you know. All the Axies then are NFTs, right? I think they didn't manage the gaming very well, but where sort of like the token for Axie took off was when Delphi, right, which is sort of like a US-based, New York-based sort of like research house, published this massive piece on Axie in 2020.
I remember that report, man. Right. Yeah, everyone.
And that report was like, we've never seen 60% retention in a game before. We've never seen a game where, like, you know, this is like number. And then that was when sort of like the token price just took off.
Yep.
Right. And then that whole, and then because the token price, yeah, because the token price took off, the NFT price took off, and then the earnings started taking off. And all of a sudden, you get an article. They're like, okay, Filipinos are quitting their jobs to make $500 a month, you know, or $1,000 a month to play Axie. Right. And then the guild, but the other thing that really helped them was actually the guild management system, right? Which nobody really is like, wait a minute, you can rent your NFTs out for people to use to play in games to earn money for your guild, right? All of a sudden, you have like 20,000 guilds that was popping up in Southeast Asia, and then primarily all in the Philippines, right? If you look at that, that's like a locally, it's like a Vietnamese gaming studio built a game primarily with Filipino players, invested by Korean and Hong Kong and Chinese VCs, but then got pumped by an American research house. Right. That was listed on Binance.
The guild right? thing sort is going like, to come back, hasn't it? Like, yeah. I saw Merit Circle is now Beam, as KBM knows, got some Beam tokens. that randomly has come back as its own like chain/VC. Mm-hmm. Are guilds still going in the Philippines? I know YGG is based out there, right? Or no, they all just died.
Yeah, no, YGG is based out there. We collaborate with them, but no, it's just because the model is not back, right? The massive number of user, massive number of like retail coming in to buy NFTs to play games or to make teams, that has not back, right? Right now, I think it's just actually just, I think is it maybe some of the existing players moving around different games, chasing for returns. I think right now is basically residual players from the last cycle rather than new players coming in.
What do you think it takes to get the new players back? We need this cycle's Delphi to come out and find some shit.
Yeah, something like that, right? I mean, goes back to your thing. It's sort of like, you know, I think there are, you know, geographical kind of based arbitrage opportunities. But I do think that that there are more bridges and tunnels now than say versus like say 2 or 3 years ago. Right. So I think what does it take for retail to come back? I mean, I think like Bitcoin goes up first, right? And then everything just kind of trickles down.
Yeah, man.
Generally,
that's been reported on Robert actually very recently. Should go read it. We should talk about your war stories a little bit from Binance. I think let's get in. You were only there a year after it started. Obviously, it's gone through quite a last 12 months, and CZ's. Mm-hmm. Chilling out in Seattle, it seems right now. But what was it like in those early days? What was he like as a boss? What was it like just being in Binance as it grew? People valued it at like $300 billion at one stage. It was going nuts during that period, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we like I tell people a story because like I started off my career like in investment banking, right? I was an analyst at Goldman when I was like, you know, the first 4 years of my life. And then I worked my ass off there. That was like 18-hour days, right? And then, but I worked harder at Binance. because for Wall Street work, it's just like, you know, that's just grunt, right? That's just like physical labor more than anything.
The Goldman Sachs team that you were with must hate you. Like me and Ovi were back and we're in investment banking too. And like once you make that jump, everyone like has it. You're in the corner of their eye, and they're like, "Fuck, that guy moved to Binance. He must be crushing it right now."
Yeah.
I left Goldman like a long time ago because I was like I don't want to be like one of those guys. But so I actually I worked in Beijing for about 10, 15 years, just like working at startups. I was like a CFO for three different startups. That's where I met CZ and He Yi, the co-founders, when we overlapped, I think, in Beijing when they were at OKCoin. So I sort of have a little bit of a history with them. And then that's why I was like, you know, was able to join them. You know, when I reached out, it was pretty easy sort of like transition to start working there. But I think the challenge was truly, like for me, when I first joined, it was truly a fully remote company. when I first to meet them, I think they were in Japan at that time. And they're like, oh, meet me here. And then send me a message on Telegram once you get there, and we'll come down and get you.
Yeah, at that point, this is like pre-Zoom being common, right? So it's not like you had seamless Zoom meetings.
We were using Zoom at that time, right? And the way we worked was just like, it was all Telegram groups. It was like the first job that I kind of had that there's no email. Like, we didn't really use email. It was like basically anything anybody worked on, you basically pull a Telegram group, and all of a sudden you got, and the Telegram group goes from
Telegram
like
just got subpoenaed. Fuck.
And it goes from like 3 people all of a sudden to 30 people, and just collaborating. And then everything we did was like just sort of like in Google Share Docs, whether it's an Excel sheet or a Google or a Word document. Everybody kind of worked on it together. So as like as a boss, you're like, you can see who's working and who's not working, right? So, it's like show up here, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm at a nondescript, you know, set in front of a 7-Eleven in Shibuya in Tokyo, and all of a sudden, then it's like, oh my gosh, there's EZ, there's that guy, and there's that guy, and just working at like a random nondescript office, and then so for me, it was like, what is this thing? Yeah. Where's the organ? Where's the structure? Right. So it's one of those environments where, like, you know, like if you kind of like it. Like, if you don't like structure, it's actually very easy for me, but then to get in, because then you basically sort of kind of like can carve out your own space, right? Because there's everything is so early, right? Like, but you know what's CZ like? You know, he is he's got massive stamina and completely relentless and going after things, right? I think that's what it takes. So
he's working 24 hours a day. He's not delegating tasks. He's on the front lines all the time for Binance, basically.
All the time. It's like, even when I left, you know, daily calls, he's in them all. Weekly calls, he's in them all. Not just in it, but actually leading it. Right. So.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's like a bit of a micromanager. Like, he knows every bit of the business. He's involved in every single part of it, which is kind of wild. I guess SBF could have used some of that. But yeah, so any what was it like?
Shots fired.
Yeah. It continues.
So yeah, what was it like being, you were on the launch pad, right? Which again, that was how.
Launchpad, it was actually one of the more, I would say, innovative products on my team. I ran labs, I think, from 2020 to 2021. So I ran Launchpad for about a year. It's probably one of the most, it's like Enigma wrapped in a mystery inside of, like, it's one of the most, I would say, like, more secretive products and teams, I think, within sort of the crypto ecosystem. People always have no idea what decisions are made. And some of that I probably can't really talk about, but I can say that, you know, we screen everything, right? They screen everything. We negotiate, you know, for me, I'm on the other side of the table now from a negotiation position, but even when I was there, you know, the terms are very, because the focus is sort of like, you know, we don't want it to become a, Binance doesn't want it to become a place where, you know, you rug users, right? Which is kind of like the norm for a lot of the other IEOs and other exchanges. So for them, they will require much more strict terms, whether in terms of lockup, whether in terms of, you know, deposits. Just so that, you know, it gives, puts a lot of negative incentive in place, for the projects, right? Such that, you know, here's your white paper, here's your promise to build your product, go and build your product, right? We'll give you adoption, like we'll give you users, right? We'll set you a secondary market for your token, but you have to go and build your product. If you don't, there are a lot of covenants in place that sort of, you know, that will create a downside scenario for you and your team, right? And then for some teams, you know, they don't like that, obviously. Bull market, That's why it's much harder, right? Because then you're like, why do I need to launch on you? Then I can just launch on other platforms, right? That's why I think some of their more high quality projects are generally come out of a bear market.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, it's good to hear that they have some stringent rules in place. I mean, mm-hmm. you started basically on the ground floor. You saw exponential growth. I'm wondering, do you have any crazier stories that you could share with us that maybe the public doesn't know about? Maybe some personal stories about your journey through Asia at this time when things were going on. I mean, like a company starting not from nothing, but doing the exponential growth that you were with it. I'm sure there was some crazy shit that went down along the way. Some fun stuff, some epic times. Maybe some times when you guys got wrecked too. We need to hear all those.
Yeah, huge trader wins would be interesting to hear as well.
Wins and losses.
Stop. Mind.
Yeah, so one of the wins that I thought I had, it was when I joined, there was we tried to build a sort of a more institutional kind of like facing trading business. So I actually recruited some of my sort of like former banker friends from Hong Kong sort of to join Binance. And then when they joined, they were like probably, this is like late 2018. They're one of the earlier sort of like, you know, front outward facing, like, because most sort of like at that point, most of the crypto exchanges sort of like weren't really like, you know, BDing in the real world, right? They're basically on Telegram or on Zoom. Like that was mostly sort of like the modus operandi back in like 2018. And then they went to a conference in Macau, a couple of guys. This is like October, November 2018. And then they came back to me after that conference. They're like, oh, wait, when you come to Hong Kong next time, you have to meet this guy. This guy is like a genius trader. They do like, they own the top like three or two of the top four accounts on BitMEX. They trade on like 30 or 40 exchanges. You know, they're making a killing doing kimchi premium. And then I go to the co-working space they have in Causeway Bay in Hong Kong. And then this guy decided to set up a shop right next to the only Binance people he's ever met in the real world. And this guy was Sam Bankman-Fried. This was when he was pre FTX, right? The FTX didn't exist. This was like Alameda, right? And then he went to I don't know why he went to Asia, but he went to a conference. Met some guys he knew from that checked out and actually worked for Binance. And then this is sort of like the opportunistic side, right? The early days. And then he decided to basically just didn't even go back to the US, just decided to sort of like stay in Hong Kong, move his team there, and then basically set up shop pretty close to the guys that were that had like a small co-working space in Hong Kong.
Interesting. Yeah. What was your first impression of him? Did you ever have any conversations with him?
No. I did a lot. I felt kind of responsible for bringing this kid kind of like to the world almost, right? My guys made the introduction to me, and then I introduced him to, you know, I brought him in, I introduced him to CZ, right? So you know, the rest of it is like, you guys can read the book and watch the movies later, but. I remember just sitting there, and then he was showing me their trading platform, right? Because he basically just set up shop, with a couple of guys. I think that was when I met some of his other guys. I don't think I met Caroline, but I definitely met Gary then. This was like November 2018. Mm-hmm. And then he was just showing me that, like, hey, this is how we trade on all these like 20, 30 different exchanges. So they did have the infrastructure. And then he was quite... I think smart in terms of sort of like, you know, butting up to like, you know, to Binance, right? When he was trading Alameda, because he was one of the top traders there, but yeah. they did a big sponsor of a Binance conference in Singapore in January of 2019. And then that was kind of like Alameda's kind of like coming out party.
Yeah, there you go. Where do you think SBF went wrong? Do you think he was pretty legit in the beginning, as maybe we know? I mean, like, really had trading.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, I think it's just quite young, right? Like, he's not like if you look at, if you just, you know, comparison, like, you know, if you look at sort of like, you know, some of the OGs in the industry, like CZ's an OG in the industry, right? He's, you know, started off doing exchanges for a really long time. Mm. Right. And then when he founded Binance in 2017, but then the team that he had, you know, they were building exchanges, I think, for, you know, 5 or 6 years, even longer. Mm. Right. And then he was at OKCoin, you know, in like the, in like 12, 13, 14. Right. Like that, like, so they kind of have the experience. Right. And I kind of have seen people around them to get rich and then get wrecked. And then, right. So sort of have been through one or two cycles for guys like SPF and his cohort. I don't think they've only been in one cycle, right. Maybe two at most. So I think, like, you know, the biggest change that I've noticed in him is, I think, is when he moved out of Hong Kong. And then actually it's like, cause in Hong Kong, you know, when where they were based, you know, they were working all day. It's like, basically, like, you know, their office, I think it was like in Pacific Place, which is like a pretty big, you know, a real legitimate office building, right? Guys went to work, and then they actually had a massive ecosystem in Hong Kong. I was like, a lot of people in Hong Kong were hurt. Like, Hong Kong was like, you know, I talk about like FTX war zones. I think Hong Kong was like a major war zone post FTX. They were, the proximity of being there, I think they were able to get, you know, a lot of the projects to go there. A lot of the funds went there. So they've, you know, there's no, how do I say this? That's why I'm quite bullish on Hong Kong as a whole, but there's a reason why, like, both BitMEX and FTX were founded, you know, in Hong Kong, right? The trading culture of that city is, and then they're like, you know, the derivative exchanges, right? Whereas the spot exchanges, you know, they're like OKX, Binance, Huobi, I think those came from China, but the derivative guys actually came out of Hong Kong and not so. So I think it's just the culture of that city is very, very prone to trading and speculating. And the knowledge there is actually quite sophisticated in terms of trading complex financial products. And then, but what's really interesting is I think when he moved out of Hong Kong and actually start going to the wild, and got corrupted during the process. So, yeah,
that's fair. So, speaking to guys like that, like, obviously you've been through one big cycle. You say you've seen seen a lot of people fall. What are you looking out for this cycle in terms of the things to maybe avoid, narratives to avoid? How do you think people can get wrecked like the most? We'll probably touch on that in the end, but particularly from like an investing standpoint, what are you most wary of?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at sort of like personally, right? I think it's a comment on sort of like what happened to me the last couple of cycles is that just, you know, don't take risk off the table, right? It's like there, like one of the mistakes was sort of like, you know, like in 2022 in Bali, right? And then she liked this villa. I was like, no, I'm going to hold on to this position. We'll come back in a year. We'll get a bigger villa.
How'd that turn out?
Not good. I'm serious. Like, these are real decisions, right? Because you, like, because I think if you're in this game, right, and then you're in this, and then you play it right, I think right, you're gonna have opportunities that you haven't seen before, right? Like I said before, like I think last market, like look, just it is like how do I say this? Like I said before, like just now, like you get, like last market cycle, you have like one Axie kind of like Axie Infinity kind of a game. I think this cycle you're gonna have like five, right? Last cycle you have like, you know, one or two layer ones. This cycle you maybe have like 10. Right, and maybe even like 20 or 30 different layer twos, and then God knows how many, like, you know, layer three app chains, right? I think just the amount of stuff that's going to come out is going to be it's going to be magnitudes bigger, right? And when that happens, I think everyone just get caught up in the moment, and then forget to take risk off the table, and then it does not help when all the KOLs are like hodl hodl hodl. Right. No, it's just everything, right? Like I've known, like, you know, in my people is like, I've known people that like bought like Luna at like less than a dollar, right? And is like a, you know, semi not billionaire on paper, and then just went to zero.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I feel like you must know a couple people like that who've made some crazy ass round trips and whatnot. Mm-hmm. What is that one of the craziest ones you've seen? Is people who are paper Luna rich, or what else you got for like biggest losses you've seen out there?
The biggest loss is like I've had friends in Korea, right, which is like, you know, probably the worst war zones like in the world for like just losing money, right? I think they both made money, but they also lost money. I've known people that, you know, had like a $500 million Luna position that they built from like, you know, just do the math, right? Sub $1, yeah. Right? And then just went to zero.
Like, how would they cope? Whew.
Go back to the grind, like whatever you're doing before, you go back to it, yeah. Right? So I joke around as like the ability for like Korean investors to withstand pain doesn't exist. Like, there's a reason why they can make movies like Parasite and Old Boy, right?
It's nuts. That Luna one was crazy, because I even remember towards the top when like Luna was hitting like 60-70 bucks, people were like, I'm gonna take some risk off the table, I'm gonna put it into Terra, you know, like I'm gonna do the smart thing here and just earn 20% on my stable. And like they would lock in a capital gain or whatever the fuck they did at 60, 70 Luna, and then they would lose it all on Terra. Like I think the worst losses were from that, because you try, even any way you try to get out of it and still like be more defensive, you just got screwed.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, and then that sort of that started cascading down, right? So for me, it's just sort of like, you know, like do enjoy, like one thing that kind of like, I wouldn't say it appreciate, but just sort of like kind of learn. Because for me, it's like I've been through different things, right? But like this kind of stuff I haven't seen before. Like this is probably the most brutal bear market, like not just for crypto, but just for like investing in public. Like not because of like, you know, like the not because of sort of like, you know, lost money or whatever, but I think it's just the brutal nature of it and the speed with like this, so sort of like it's both fast and it was furious, right? Like it's just like the speed and the violent nature of this bear market is just like, I don't think people were physically and mentally prepared for.
Yeah.
That's why I think right now, like the things that I've been kind of like telling my team is like, we have to get out of this sort of like, cause everyone had what is that? Put PTSD, like post, you got to get out
I
of that.
You overcame mine today. I witnessed it earlier.
yeah. You have to get out of that mentality to be able to sort of like functional, to be able to function, I think, in a new sort of in this market, right? I think a lot of people kind of miss the cycle, right? Because they're still suffering.
I think the way that you described it, though, like how brutal this bear market has been, and Luna kind of jogged my memory. It's like when tech meets almost like meme, that's when things just go nuts. Like Bitcoin itself is essentially just like a meme that took hold and everyone then believed in its value. Mm-hmm. Sol right now kind of feels like that, right? Like it's got that sort of diehard army about it from when it was at like $7 that everyone's going to like hold it no matter what. And it feels as though when you see that in this space, that's the stuff that goes parabolic. Like Luna, everyone kind of knew it didn't smell right. Like the Luna Foundation just like bidding Bitcoin. It was like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, everyone knew it was not right, but everyone just kind of believed in the meme. And I guess I'm trying to look for that sort of stuff a bit more of a cycle. Like, you actually have the memes themselves, but then when you have this like new tech meets meme, like that's why I quite like Ordinals, like you said, like this, when people get behind something and they really believe in the new tech style of it, it can just go nuts.
Was that a fancy way of saying scams? Anyway, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah,
maybe.
No, like it's like, what is it, like things are supposed to be hard but it becomes too easy. I think that's like probably the biggest warning. Yeah, because
I think that's all I'm expanding to do, like you said, capital inflows continue coming in, and It really is. Like, it was so many compounding back swans back then that caused the fall, and then like some stagnation and doubt in crypto. And that, I mean, like we touched on earlier, the equity markets are at highs. Money's, you know, wealth effect is real. And, you know, there's a lot of catching up for crypto to do. It doesn't have to just like, you know, roll back over or just sit here. It definitely can keep expanding. And I think overcoming that bear market PSD is really tough. As I said, I'm trying to do it in real time. And I think I got it. Hopefully it's not a local top. But yeah, you got to be optimistic in this market for things and for the future for sure. With that being said, should we move on to some of the final stuff here? Unless you got any more like backdoor stories in your pocket of some crazy CZ shit or other Binance things that you can share. The crowd
I gotta be very careful right now.
All right, how about is CZ ever leaving Seattle anytime soon?
Just use code names.
No, I gotta protect my brother, man.
That's fair. You think he's gonna be in Seattle a while, or what do you think they have? Can you opine on that?
Have a nice holiday. Have a nice holiday out there.
No comment.
No comment. He pleads the fifth. I don't know. That sounds bearish, but I'm not gonna take that position. Anyway. Yeah, maybe as we close it down with Robit spins and duels, so definitely stick around for that. We're going to give away some money to users or viewers. And before that happens, we want to hear your best advice on how not to get wrecked. We asked every person every week. You touched on a little bit, but expand on something. Mm-hmm. How do you not get wrecked in this upcoming cycle?
How do you not stack Bitcoin? And then buy real. What is it? Take care of yourself. Like, seriously, like for me, it's sort of like, you know, like take care of yourself. Like, if you're if you want to buy something, just go and buy it. Sell something, buy something, right?
Like, take yourself off the table, like you're saying. Like, don't be afraid to spend your money.
Don't be afraid to spend your money. Yeah, because it's one of the things. Like, I think a lot of us. You know, I've seen it with people that like sort of like first time around. How do I say this? This is like most people are one hit wonders. That's just power law dynamics, right? Yeah. Like it's really hard to get it the second time and the third time, right? It's possible, but it's harder, mm-hmm. right? Like respect that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, I think everyone should. Take heed there. It's like take money off the table, mm-hmm. treat yourself, keep your mental and physical in tip-top shape so you can make it that second time. And that's some good advice.
Because I think we've been through enough cycles that I think I've seen sort of like the ups and downs, mm-hmm. right? Generally, like the big, like even within sort of like this ecosystem now, like you're going to start, I think, but right now, right? Like what's interesting right now is like in the US, you basically see institutions piling in, right? That's why you see like sort of like CME Bitcoin interest is like at all time high, right? Like, and then whereas like for Coinbase, you know, their retail volume hasn't picked up at all, right? But the thing is that like people that are actually, you know, making money in this market are basically, I would say like, you know, like OGs that have sort of stayed in. Right. Yeah. So for me, it's just like, you know, what happens when you take risk off the table? You survive.
Yeah. No, right? I think that's what a lot of our guests have said.
Right. And then for me, it's just sort of like, you know, like this cycle, I mean, you're seeing, I haven't, I'll be honest with you. Like I've been in the capital markets game for like almost 20 years. You know, when you're actually seeing real lawsuits, real prosecutions, like that's not fun and games. Like it's not. So I would say sort of like, you know, be cautious, as well. So for me, you know, I'm like a CFO by training. So for me, it's always about sort of like the risk. It's always like sort of like, what is your upside downside? The reason why I like crypto so much is that just because you get asymmetric return here that you don't get, I think, in anywhere else, but understand that. Right, like you know what I'm saying?
It's like, there's caution. You gotta have caution too.
Yeah, correct. Right. So
yep, absolutely. Thank you, man. Yeah, stick around. We're gonna give away some money to some people. I think we're doing some Robit duels. We are gonna select the winner of a loot box spin. Those are coming back soon. We're doing one after this show offline for the winner. of this selection. And yeah, I don't know. You want to fire up the duels or the spin first?